Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Every time someone passes the century mark, the reporters who go visit them always inevitably ask them, what is the secret to long life? And you get all kinds of answers, everything from eating oatmeal every morning to having lots of children and grandchildren.
Sometimes the grandchildren ask the questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
I asked my grandma, 102, what was your secret? She said, I never ate candy and I never drank coffee. I also never drank milk.
And yet, I was reading back through some of these old people's recommendations, and some of them said a cup of coffee every morning. So look, the evidence is scattered all over the place. Thankfully, we have an expert here.
She cheated at cards, too, Grandma did.
I don't think she would point to that as a secret to longevity, though. Leslie Martin is with us, a co-author of the new book, The Longevity Project, Surprising Discoveries for Health and Long Life from the Landmark 8-Decade Study. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
All right, so I actually went on to ewikihow.com and asked, how do we live a long time, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so these were probably the same kind of things you were studying that you were looking over the results through. Well, some of them were predictable, like, you know, don't smoke, wear sunblock. Some of them were things like reduce stress, educate yourself, and develop a sleep schedule. These are the kind of things that have been around for who knows how long in terms of predicting long life, right?
Sure,
Don't stand in traffic.
That's a good one.
Actually, that is one of them. Be safe, really, and in there important. Is look both ways before you cross the street and floss every day. So you probably had a lot of these things that you both proved or disproved. What were some of the things that came across as surprisingly untrue?
Well, I think it's interesting that you started with this list of stuff, because I think one of the major things we can say from this project is that you don't need a bunch of lists. I mean, you talk about the person who says coffee, you've got to have it, and someone else who says stay away from it. We get so caught up in having very specific details and things that we worry about so much. And what we found in the Longevity Project is that a lot of that stuff really doesn't matter as much as we think it does. There are a number of things that are important to long life, but those are life patterns, things like being involved with family and friends, contributing to your community.
It's not an input-output kind of thing.
Right. Not directly. Yeah.
But there are things that I found really surprising in your book, as in, you know, people often say have a less stressful job. You know, the guy who works in the incense store is probably going to have a longer life than the trauma surgeon, right? But that turns out to not be true.
We found exactly the opposite, actually. Some of the very longest live participants were those who had quite stressful jobs, and they worked very hard, sometimes quite late into life, and that really served them well. Yeah.
Why is that?
These were people who tended to be quite committed to what they did. They really found meaning in their jobs, and they cared about what it was they were doing. And that seems to be an important component.
So 100-year-old air traffic controllers?
Yeah, we didn't have any air traffic controllers in our study. So that might be an exception. There always is an exception.
All right. But I mean, you also looked a lot at marriage. Marriage has long mm-hmm. been a predictor of a long, we're not going to say happy life, but a long life.
We're not going to say happy?
Well, you can't, because scientists don't bring happy into it. But they've often said that marriage will extend your life. You found that not necessarily be true as well.
Not necessarily. Actually, most of the studies, if you look at them, although they do show some protective effect for marriage, it tends to benefit men. So it's really the men that are driving that relationship. And an interesting finding that we had was that those who were stably single, and particularly women who were stably single, did virtually as well as those who were stably married. The experience of being divorced is a problematic thing. You know, that is a traumatic experience. That is a risk factor. Men can ameliorate that risk by getting remarried after a divorce, but women really don't help themselves much by getting remarried. They're just as well off to stay single.
We could have an entire hour-long discussion on why marriage is more beneficial.
Just a takeaway here, and so remarrying doesn't help women. Marrying doesn't help women.
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah. I see. Are you married?
I am not.
So she is going to live to 200. All right. So let's talk about some of the things which are predictors. I mean, some of the things, obviously, not smoking. Right. Mm-hmm. That's a
big one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Flossing.
We didn't look specifically at flossing, but I think generally
probably a good habit.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't actually.
Yeah, me too.
But I mean, the specific things that you do just to stay healthy, those are probably all safe bets.
And one of our biggest predictors was that even from childhood, the kids who were more conscientious, and so these are kids who are dependable, reliable, trustworthy, persistent, those kids lived longer lives. And it's very reasonable, and for the health behaviors that we did have, it's reasonable to expect that these kids would do things like floss and drive at a reasonable speed and, you know, take care of their health in a variety of
ways. But what are the other important things? I mean, if you can look at it in broad strokes, you say that you don't necessarily have to avoid stress, but you have to find a job you care about. What are the other kind of guidelines of that kind?
Well, one of the really surprising findings had to do with cheerfulness and optimism. And there's a lot of advice out there to, you know, cheer up, laugh more, be happy, and that will really help your health to be better. And there are also a lot of studies that have looked at that. And that is a good thing, we found, when you're facing a short-term crisis. You know, if you're optimistic, you think things can get better, you will stay engaged in the process and overcome that obstacle. But as a life approach, every decision you make, if you're thinking, oh, things will turn out fine, you know, everything will be all right, that really lead you to evaluate risks differently and underestimate the risks.
Well, look, some of our greatest curmudgeons have lived a very long time. I don't know how old Kurt Vonnegut was when he died, but it was a ripe old age.
I'm not cheerful and optimistic.
Exactly. So cheerful, optimistic, positive outlook, not important. But are there things that were important? Predictors.
We found that social networks and connections, and I don't mean Facebook here because certainly these people didn't have access to Facebook, but being connected to other people, getting involved in communities, being engaged, particularly if that engagement involved helping other people, that was a very strong predictor. That was really important.
Actually, volunteering, or are you talking about like helping your friends out?
Either one. We found that people who had more connections with others, whether that was their kids or their friends, actually talking to them or getting together with them regularly, the more you did that, the better your outlook. But then on top of that, if you were doing things that helped them, or, you know, it could be helping people that you don't know, that was an additional benefit.
Was that a physiological benefit that you could measure, or more of a got more reason to live because I got more connections to people?
Well, in this study, we didn't have any physiological data. So it certainly could be a sort of will to live. But my guess is that it also might be partly physiological. When you have connections, when you're doing things that make you feel good, that does have some physiological benefits. So we didn't look at that directly, but my guess is that that is part of the puzzle.
I would imagine good health care is probably a pretty good predictor of long life too, right? You didn't have that data either?
Well, these were all middle class people, so we didn't have the low end of the SES spectrum. And in a way, that's good because it allows us to
take away certain things
that sometimes would be the obvious and immediate explanatory variables really aren't here. We know that these people did have generally good access to health care.
That's Leslie Martin. She is co-author
of
the new book.
A long, long time.
How long?
Oh, 102.
As long as she stays unmarried, her options are way open.
I'm good to go then.
The new book's called The Longevity Project, Surprising Discoveries for Health and Long Life from the Landmark 8-Decade Studies.
Everybody's got advice on how to live longer. A listener from Columbia, South Carolina writes, just don't smoke or do narcotics. Eat plants in your diet. Don't overly partake in alcohol and work your body. And a listener in Jersey City, New Jersey echoes that sentiment with drink wine, smoke weed, and have fun. Who to believe? Share your advice, 877-8-MY-TAKE. And if you ever want to get a jump on the conversation, join any of the conversations, subscribe to our texts. Every day we'll text you with what we're covering in the next day's show. You can weigh in. Here's how. Send the word START to 69866 and start the conversation. I'm John Huckenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway. We'll be right back.